Ladies and gentlemen, we are live, broadcasting from the world-famous Seattle Comedy Underground, providing the Pacific Northwest community with quality entertainment for well over 30 years. My name's Joe Hicks. This is a Tight 60 podcast. Joining me tonight, as always, is the lovely, the talented, the Seattle manager of the Comedy Underground and co-host of a Tight 60 podcast, Mr. James Milton.
Good afternoon, good afternoon.
And our special guest this evening, this weekend's headlining comedian from the Seattle Comedy Underground. You may have seen him on his appearance season 7 of America's Got Talent, or his film appearances, National Lampoon's Teed Off, Teed Off 2, and Not Another Celebrity Movie, where he portrayed Charlie Sheen. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dave Burley.
Gentlemen, how are you? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Dave. Great to have you here. Thanks for joining us down here in the cave.
It's nice. I like the artificial sunlight.
That's the way we do it in Seattle. That's the only kind of sunlight we can get, so we're going to take it.
Does it provide vitamin D?
That's what milk's for, I guess. Okay. That's what I hear. That's what they tell me. So I don't know. Unfortunately, I'm lactose intolerant, so I'm
You
I'm
are. I didn't know that about you.
Well, a little bit.
Are you a gluten-free, gluten allergy guy as well?
I'm not a very tolerant person in general. There are many things that I cannot tolerate.
I knew that. I was just concerning your...
I dated a girl, actually, and she broke up with me because I was missing part of my big toe, and she was lactose intolerant.
Boom! Nailed it.
Anything? Nothing?
No? Nailed it.
No, that was gold. That's
how's Seattle treat you,
Add that to
Dave?
The active.
No. That was given to me by my grandmother.
How's Seattle treat you, Dave? Do you come down here often? Or?
Maybe a couple, two, three times a year. And I love it here. It's always sunny. They're lying. You guys are lying to everybody in California.
It's the best kept secret.
It never rains here.
That's how we keep people out.
That's a good idea.
Just say, Lord, yeah. It rains occasionally. It's terrible. It's the worst place ever. You don't want to be here.
Right.
And, you know, we have a good time. That's the way we roll.
Yeah. You Californians, you stop at Medford. Do not come any further north.
They usually do.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So are you based in Las Vegas? I know you perform out there a lot.
Yeah. I live in Vegas, and I live in L.A., both places.
Wow.
So, yeah. So they're giving houses away out in Vegas.
So you're living the dream. You've got multiple homes. You're jet setting. It's
Well, yeah, you would think. The Vegas
setting?
The Vegas house is great because it's me and a buddy, 4 bedrooms, 3.5 bath, pool, jacuzzi, for nothing. And then I live in a kitchen cupboard in North Hollywood for about the same price. But it's not nothing because it's all of about 200 square feet. And it's just that's the price you got to pay. I don't know. What is the cost of living like up here?
I would say
depends on where you are.
It's approaching Los Angeles.
It's high.
The rent's going up
everywhere.
It's
all over the place. Seattle's weird in the sense that there's really upscale housing located right next to really, like, not-so-upscale housing. And so the market's, like, all over the place.
That's
really
everywhere, though. Bizarre. Washington, D.C. is like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I grew up in Indiana, and there was a pretty clear divide between the haves and the have-nots. And it seems like in Seattle it's just a homogenous, like, I don't even know what.
You know what amazed me was your traffic.
Yes.
Jeez, I didn't know you guys.
Yes.
I mean, it's, like, right up there with L.A.
Yeah, well, because, you know, Seattle, it bottlenecks on the south end, and then it bottlenecks again on the north end. And there is no room for expansion on the east or the west side. So all you have is, 4 lanes of I-5, 2 lanes I-99.
Yeah, and the 405 is legendary for being a complete disaster, too.
So well, we got real estate covered. We got traffic and weather.
Weather.
Where are we going from here?
Sports.
Sports. All right, good. Do you guys have like a Seahawks chant or something you do?
No, we did that last night. You were here. We did that during the show, Dave.
I'm trying to forget it.
Really? What happened?
Oh, yeah. The host led the audience in several rounds of Seahawks, and they were quite responsive. They were quite receptive to it.
Why would you?
I myself am tired of it. You know what? I'm not the only one. Last year during the the conference playoffs that was here. We had the home game here, and they won. And there was a couple walking on the street right outside, and the husband was super excited. He's like, "See?" And his wife was just like, "Hawks."
Again.
Ah, enough already. Jesus. And I was with her on that one.
So how does that work, though? The host gets everybody excited about the Seahawks, and then the comedy stylings of Dave Burley.
And then he tricks you. Hey, we have a comedy, actually. It's not a...
And then the 49ers fan. Dave Burley, here he is.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then, yeah. And we have a chant, too. It's from the coach, Jim Harbaugh, in the locker room. And at the end of the game, he says, "Who's got it better than us?" And then the whole Niners team says, "Nobody." But now, for like a whole year, he's going to say, "Who's got it better than us?" And all the Niners are going to go, "The Seahawks. The Seahawks definitely have it better than us. They actually won the whole
thing."
This
is a contentious rivalry, though, because there's several comedians who come up here from San Francisco. And while they're here, we'll have comedians from Seattle in the green room, and they will get in a ferocious battle about rings and defensive backs and secondary, and it gets pretty it's bordering on uncivil at times.
It's a good rivalry.
I'm not that guy. I can't get excited about dudes chasing a ball around on a field for some arbitrary reason. Like,
are you dead inside, Joe?
Yeah, you know, that's one way you could describe it.
Do you like any sports, or you're just against American pastime of football?
I can watch a little UFC if you want to call that a sport. You know, guys like just beating the crap out of each other, that's exciting to me. But guys like chasing a ball around, like, what do? You go home at the end of the day, you're like, well, we chased the ball around.
You identified with a group is what you've done.
I guess, man.
You've strengthened social bonds through a pastime, a tradition. But here's my take. You mentioned UFC. I like boxing, and I would like UFC, but it seems like every UFC fight, it starts out, I'm like, these guys are going to fight, and they throw about two or three punches, and then at the point in a boxing match where the ref would break up the huddle or whatever.
That's where it gets interesting in UFC.
No, that's when they just roll around the ground together and put knees and elbows in places they shouldn't go.
That's called the ground game, you know? And that's why I love UFC, because they fight for 5 minutes, and then a half-naked girl gets up and walks around a little bit to kind of get you focused again, and then it's just 5 minutes at a time, three rounds, boom, it's done. You can forget about
it. Or they fight half-naked girls, like porn stars these days, right?
Wow.
Ronda Rousey, I guess. They have a new women's division in the UFC, and there's a woman named Ronda Rousey, and she's taking them all by storm, so... We have a phone call. We have a caller here, but we ignore the callers.
We're not going to. This is very important what we're doing.
You know, Dave, one thing I wanted to ask you about, though, seriously. I saw on your YouTube channel that you auditioned for SNL last year. Is that what happened?
Yeah, in a roundabout way, yeah.
And I'm just curious about the process, because Saturday Night Live is obviously something that I've grown up watching for a long time, and I'm a huge fan of it. And a lot of comics like aspire to get that moment, that shot. How do you get that audition? What's the process?
Well, whose toes do you have to suck, Dave?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to submit through your management, and then they have to kind of know somebody within the SNL ranks, and somebody who has Lorne Michaels' ear, and then from there, it's depending on what they want, right? Because they're looking for a specific cast, as you saw, I think, in this past season. They ultimately brought in a female African-American, and I believe there was an Indian girl on board. It's up and down the sketch ladder.
So you weren't ethnic enough.
Of what they're looking for. I wasn't. I wasn't maybe heavy set enough or lesbian enough, or I'm not sure exactly what it was.
What's that audition like? Is there just like three guys in a room and you go in there, or did they? I didn't see the clip, but I saw that you'd done the audition.
Yeah, no, actually, I think what you're thinking of is actually it was just a submission. I didn't fly out in front of Lorne, so I just needed to. They were asking for something specific, some characters, some stand up. So at least they were inquiring, which was nice. And I was just lazy enough for one day to just throw it up on YouTube and then give that to my manager. And so maybe that's why I'm not on it. I didn't take enough time to.
You got to put in the effort, Dave. Come on now.
Yeah. Well, did you see they like cleaned house again this season? They fired like four or five, castmates because they had one of the lowest ratings ever.
That's kind of been the story with SNL for the last 30 years, though, right?
Like,
it seems like peaks and valleys.
Year, I can't even remember a recent peak, really, to be honest with you. Billy Crystal, maybe?
Huh?
Billy Crystal, maybe, in the 90s? Remember, he was on there for a while?
I mean, I think since then they've done some good stuff. They had different casts since then. They've had, the stand-ups were on there, Chris Rock and David Spade. And then after that, they had Norm Macdonald. They had that era. And then we had a good era with Tim Meadows.
And they fired Norm, though, and Norm was one of the funniest things that had ever happened to SNL. So maybe that's part of the problem.
Hey, man, Let it go. All right.
Hey, they didn't hire Dave. He wasn't ethnic enough. They let Norm
go.
It's a sinking ship over there. It's a disaster.
I just think there's just so many other things to watch now, right? And with the power of the DVR.
Yeah, on the internet.
Well, you could maybe get the top three sketches that were funny the next day on YouTube or, that become viral. And then you're like, all right, I'll watch those. But not a lot of people want to sit around from 11:30 to 1 a.m. Yeah. And watch, wait for three good sketches.
Right. Yeah. And it's usually a joke that's, like, funny in the first 30 seconds, and then they just hammer it for the next 3 minutes, Like, if you've seen the joke at the beginning, that's what's coming again and again and again.
Yeah, and it's always 12:30 to 1 a.m. are all the weakest sketches. It's just, like, they're barely getting any laughs,
Do you put a lot of time and effort into your YouTube channel? Do you get a lot of traction online?
I'm just starting to now. I finally got a guy who's going to help me do these clips. They're going to be just under a minute. They're going to be called Burly a Minute. You see what I did there?
Burly,
little play on words.
I like it.
Because I think the people, they'll look at a clip, and then it'll be, they'll see 4 or 5 minutes, and they'll go, I do not have 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah. A minute, ironically enough, strangely enough, is pretty much the attention span of your average viewer.
It's funny, because
you'll
look at a clip, and it'll say 4 or 5 minutes, and they'll go, I don't have time for that, but yet they will still spend 5 hours a day on YouTube just watching, hundreds of 1 minute clips or just quick things.
Funny.
So I'm going to make it a weekly thing, and it'll be a little bit of everything, some sketch and, some stand-up, some impressions.
So is it going to be like a one-man act kind of thing, or are you going to have other people involved? Or?
Yeah, I think I'm going to start out just on my own right now, and then we'll see if I bring in some other players and stuff. But, in a minute, how much dialogue can you have with somebody else? And
yeah.
That's why you guys do this for an hour, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
He brings up a good point.
Well, the internet, it's a weird place. Like, I don't know, back in the day, it seems like a lot of comics, you'd have to live out of your suitcase in the trunk of your car and drive all over the nation just to get your name out there.
There's a dude that does that still in L.A. He's living in a van.
Oh, yeah.
Jay Leno?
Yeah, Jay Leno, too. Yeah, Jay Leno and Dave Stone, they share a van.
Leno?
Dave Stone?
In Redondo Beach or something, who knows?
Leno is an addict, man. He's still a road hound. He's always performing, always.
Really?
Yeah, he needs it. It's like a huge drug for him.
It's crazy. You don't hear about that a lot.
Yep.
I know Rogan's like that too. Like, he doesn't need it. He's always working with UFC and all those other guys, but he's constantly on the road. So
yeah,
I guess it's something
people
are addicted to it.
Yeah. I saw Richard Lewis a couple of years ago. Me and my buddy went and saw Richard Lewis at a stand-up gig, and it seemed like he was just up there riffing and fucking around. And we just concluded, I think he just wanted to have something to do this week, and he just wanted to leave the house and have something fun to do for a while. So he booked some gigs.
So where are you headed next? You're on the road right now, right?
Yeah. I go to the Bay Area tomorrow. And do the Throckmorton Theater in Marin. That's
cool.
A cool place where Robin Williams and Dana Carvey, half of that used to play.
Yeah.
But they would come out there. It's on a Tuesday night, and it's hosted by Mark Pitta. And
I've heard that name before.
A lot of great comics come through there. So
it's
fun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
cool.
It's fun. So doing that Tuesday, and then doing a winery. Hopefully they're okay up in Napa. They just had a big earthquake today.
Wow.
Or this morning, I guess, 6.0. And then, a couple more little spot shows, and then back to Vegas for a bit. And
have you done the winery show before?
Yeah, I have.
What's that like? I'm curious.
It depends.
You're
on
smiling already.
What time is the show?
I'm just thinking of
question.
A memory.
Those have to be like 4 p.m. shows. You can't do it at 9. Smashed.
They're already 4 bottles in. It's a winery.
Yeah, well, and it's usually outdoors. I mean, they have some cool venues where it's like inside or down in the actual belly of the winery and stuff with like barrels. But usually, if it's a nice weather like up in Napa Valley, it's outdoors, and it's kind of tough outdoor gigs because all the laughter dissipates up into the night sky unless you've got 15,000 there. But usually they have about 50 people just sampling some Zin and Merlot and that sort of thing, very refined comedy.
They're swishing and spitting in the background while you're up there doing impersonations.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they can be fun crowds though too, depending on what time they got there and started tasting. Huh.
That's funny.
Do you drink wine?
I do. I love wine. Yeah.
Are you a red or a white?
I'm a red. It's got like great health benefits too. I recently read that a glass of red wine a day will help keep the doctor away. However, I found that a bottle of red wine a day will help keep family, friends, and potential employers away.
That's right. Right? That works.
That's what I was thinking.
I do. I like Zinfandel, Cabs. I'm not a big Pinot Noir fan.
How do you feel about the Malbec grape?
The Malbec?
Malbec. That's what I meant.
You stick with Shakespeare.
This guy.
No, I like
them all. I'm relating.
Syrah.
There you go.
Sip, Syrah.
I like that.
You don't drink wine, I take it.
I've had a couple bottles.
After asking about the Malbec grape.
Yeah, I misordered. The sommelier gave me a sniff of his nose and then brought me some Gato Negro.
Boom.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys have some good wineries up here, actually. People don't know that in Washington.
Yeah, on the eastern side of the state, there's a whole bunch out there by the Tri-Cities area.
I'm not a wine guy. The only thing I know about wine is that Maynard from Tool has his own winery. That's like
who?
Maynard from Tool.
Oh.
He makes his own wine. That's like the only thing I really know about. Apparently, he's some kind of wine snob. He's got a winery out in Arizona. Everybody told him he's crazy. He can't go grapes in Arizona. And
he did it against all odds. He defied...
The dude's a maniac. His wife, or his mom, I mean, was she died cremated, sprinkled the ashes on the grapes, you know, and then he, like, released a special little sample of the wine.
Of dead mom, so Shiraz.
I'm just saying, man, I don't know. That's all I know about wine. You probably shouldn't have asked me about anything in general, really. But
hey, you don't got to get defensive. We're just chatting about wine. If you don't know a lot, you know, you just say Malbec wrong, and then we'll all laugh at you, and then we'll move on.
Just trying to relate, man.
We'll just stick with vodka. That's always easy.
Yeah.
Ugh.
No? So you don't really drink at all?
I'm a beer guy.
You're a beer guy. Me too.
Because it takes me way longer to just turn into a drunken maniac drinking beer than it does anything else. That's really the main thing there. I'm just putting off the insanity. So it's got
in Australia, they have like 11, 12% alcohol content beers.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
That's why they play that football without any pads.
Yeah.
Because they're all hammered and they
they feel no pain.
Forgot their uniform. Yeah.
Yeah, they got
Aussie rules football. That stuff's fun.
That's cool. Bugs that'll kill you in Australia, so you got to have a good buzz on just to fucking get by.
Just to survive, the elements, the harsh climate.
When did you discover your knack for impersonations, Dave?
I started when I was six. I used to do Paul Lind, and you guys know Paul Lind.
Who's that?
Yeah, he did the
talk show circuit for a while, right? Like all those weird game shows.
He was a big Hollywood Squares guy. Kind of a flamboyant dude. Had like a funny laugh. It was like, and that was kind of his calling card. That was it. And so that's all I had to do for the impression. A little Muhammad Ali, some. Monday Night Football guys, you know, Howard Cosell and all that. And then, just making my dad and uncle laugh and then kind of just kept it going from there. And I like to, moving forward, you would watch guys who would do a certain impression, whether it's, you know, Jack Nicholson or Captain Kirk. His name is escaping
What
me.
Is his name?
William Shatner.
William Shatner. You'd watch these Kevin Pollak guy, growing up other guys who are doing impressions, and you're like, so you'd start doing an impression of them doing an impression. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think like impressions kind of became hack and lost their appreciation because every comic was doing the same guy. And then it was just like, well, all right. Now, if a comic comes along and he does somebody that nobody does, then it's appreciated. Then even like comedians are sitting there and they're just like, man, dude, nobody does that guy, you know? And then at least if they're comedy aficionados and they're in the club and they're like, man, I've never seen that. Then it feels good that you've pulled it off and you're still kind of giving a stroke to the impression art.
Yeah, you got several of those. I like your Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad, and I like the Owen Wilson is a nice
touch. Wilson, Vince Vaughn, and I'm working on ones like a Paul Rudd or even like Jason Bateman and stuff. But the problem is, you lose maybe a third, two-thirds of the audience if you start doing stuff that's too obscure.
I Heart Huckabee's references.
Or it's not.
Well, that's probably why some impersonations are the go-to impersonations, because everybody's heard of this. Like walking, I'm sure.
Yeah. Like well, yeah. And then if it seems like every time I do a show and I ask for requests, because sometimes I'll do that, and then people throw out the Walkins or the Nicholsons or the Arnold Schwarzeneggers. And then you realize, all right, you know, got to give at least a third of the audience what they want, and then hopefully you can get the other two-thirds back with something like a Vince Vaughn or an Owen Wilson, you know.
So what do you do when you ask that question
or
and
Paul
someone
Lynn.
Throws a Marissa Tomei at you?
See, that's the thing. Like last night, that girl said, what was the Activia? Jamie Lee Curtis.
No one's
ever said Jamie Lee Curtis. Gotten Dolly Parton, Britney Spears. You know, I wouldn't even know where to start.
Do you have any female impressions? Or?
Katharine Hepburn. That's it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She's real distinctive.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So I just think there's other female comics coming out
maybe
now.
Maybe a Fran Drescher?
I dated a Fran Drescher, actually.
Wow. She,
yeah. Kala Marie Tenodo from Manthoon, Massachusetts. Yeah. She had a dad named Busty and a mom named Marie and a brother named Anthony. And I was over there for Sunday dinner. That's how she laughed. It was
awesome.
So
how long did that relationship last? How long could you stand that?
Well, no, I went to visit her for a wedding, her friend's wedding, and I stayed at her house with her dad, Busty. Yeah, Busty the Nodo.
Busty.
He didn't say four words to me the entire weekend. And I'm sitting there.
I imagine him as like a big Paul Sorvino kind of guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, 100% Sicilian, great family, but just they should have had their own sitcom. Oh. And so we're sitting there at Sunday dinner, 1 o'clock on a Sunday. Grandma's been making gravy all day long, you know. And then, and then so he sits there and he finally goes, so this is day four. He goes, so Dave, Kala tells me you're a comedian. Make me laugh. Swear to God. right out of Goodfellas. And I go, actually, Busty, I'm union, and
union.
I'm off right now. And he goes, you're union. That's good. I like that. I like that. I got something you could use in your skits. You know that Jay Leno? He was from Andover, Massachusetts. It's Leno, Busty. It's Leno. I know, Marie. I said Leno. Anyway, he was from the Andover there, that Jay Leno. And here's a funny skit you could do. I was in the greenhouse the other day. I got a greenhouse in the backyard, and I go there for my alone time. And I was there at 7 a.m., and I'm gluing this pot together, you know, one of them clay pots together. And I freaking glued my fingers together with that freaking wacky glue. It's crazy glue, Busty. It's crazy. That's what I said, woman. And so anyway, I glue it together, my fingers, and now I'm talking like this, and then it, his son Anthony goes, Pop, you always talk like this with your fingers. And he goes, so I go upstairs and I say, Marie, I glued my freaking fingers together. What should I do? And she said, go to the hospital, Busty. So I'm freaking going down the stairs. All 10 fingers are glued together. And I get in the car, Dave, and I'm driving to the hospital with my elbows. And I get there. They make me wait 3 hours in the emergency room, Dave. And then they put my fingers in nail polish remover after 3 hours. And I go home and I march up the stairs and I go, Marie, I went to the hospital. They made me wait 3 hours. You know what they had me do? And she said, put your fingers in nail polish remover, Busty. Yeah, you knew that and you had me drive all the way to the hospital? I needed my alone time, Busty. That's a true story from the DeNotos.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So that back to your original question, that relationship ended soon after.
Soon
that.
After that story, just, soon yeah. After the epic story.
It was the Sicilian family and little black Irish Dave from San Francisco Bay Area. So
that's you, Black Irish Dave.
Black Irish Dave.
All right.
Yeah,
but black. What is? I don't. What's black Irish?
I don't. Yeah, know. I didn't know either growing up, and my dad said we were black Irish, and so I just formed a gang called the Lucky Charms. This is back in the 90s, you know.
Did you tell the guys at SNL you were Black Irish? Because you weren't ethnic enough.
No, I know. Exactly. See, I think you're going down the... Now you're talking about the Malpec grape. See?
See, now you're doing it.
I have no idea what's going
on. I think Black Irish is when all the Spaniards came ashore in Ireland and conquered the Irish women.
Oh.
You see what it... Yeah, so you got a little...
So we're going way back.
So, I have some Spanish
Moors
blood
stuff,
in me,
right? You're talking
I believe.
About that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I sure.
Okay.
Why not?
I'm just trying to make sense of the situation.
Yeah,
it's like the Malbec grape, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Americans don't know anything about history, do we?
We don't have any history.
No.
We're like a few hundred years old. You can go to England and shit's like 3,000 years old. And in America, it's like, here's a brick building that's been there for 200 years. So
very young.
Enjoy.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, they have the history tours here, the underground tours in Seattle. They just take you to like all the filthiest, like nastiest alleys and... Say, hey, it doesn't look like much now, but, you know, 200 years ago, this was filled with whores and mud. So
well, it's so funny, too, because it's such a, you know, grass is always greener on the other side, because I was over in Rome getting off a cruise ship, and the guy driving me to the airport in the sweet, pimped-out black Mercedes, he's probably like 25, you know, and he's like... So, where are you from? And I go, Las Vegas. He goes, oh, the Las Vegas. I love the Las Vegas. It's so bright and so much partying and nice, you know, the girls and everything. He goes, I spent 17 days in Las Vegas. I'm like, nobody spends 17 days in Las Vegas, right? And I go, where are you from? He goes, oh, I'm from Rome. And I go, you live in downtown Rome? He goes, yeah. I go, that is like one of the most beautiful places on earth. And he goes, it is so old. He goes, but the Las Vegas, it is so new.
It's so classy.
You know? It's like, oh, come on.
The pyramids in Vegas are new. They're nice.
Right,
they're classy.
Yeah, you got
know?
New York,
you
got
crappy
you got Paris,
Egyptian pyramids.
You got pirates there. That's what more
hilarious.
Do you want?
That's hilarious.
Do you do a lot of globe traveling? Do you travel overseas a lot?
I'll do maybe a cruise ship once a month, maybe once every 2 months.
Now, do you perform on the ship? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll do.
You just stow away in the luggage compartment.
Well, I didn't know if he's like those guys that like, hey, it's time for my cruise ship vacation. I love this sort of
right,
thing.
Right, and then just go up and stand on stage and just start telling jokes.
I don't know, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a good gig. I primarily do it with Celebrity Cruise Lines, and they kind of a. I guess a headier, smarter demographic. You know, there's not a lot of Larry the Cable Guy fans sucking on 8-foot margaritas.
They
you know
all about the Malbec grape,
right? The Malbec grape, folks. You know, it's just it's a different class. You know, it's like 30 to 65, kind of right in my wheelhouse for my demographic, and I only work like. I work two shows a week.
Two shows a week?
Yeah, two 45-minute
like
sets. 45
minutes?
That's it. And then sometimes what they'll do is they'll give you like a you know, one 45-minute regular show, and then they'll give you a late show, and you can just
does everything
let
comped?
It fly.
Do you just have full run of the
everything's taken care of. You can bring
wow.
a guest.
Nice.
You get guest status.
Wow.
You know, you don't have to live down on the first deck and play cards with the Russians or anything. You know, it's a
Titanic stowaway kind of shit.
Row the thing or anything down. Oh, it's great, you know. So filet mignon and lobster tail and tell a few jokes and drink half-price martinis once a month. I like it.
That's a brave struggle you're going through there, Dave.
Yeah. Well, no, it does get old. I know a lot of guys who do it, you know, year-round.
Those cruise ships break down, too. And the next thing you know, you're just, like, floating through the ocean and basically what amounts to a giant toilet.
I think that's happened, what, twice?
It's happened, like, 3 or 4 times now, right? I don't know. Like,
yes,
yeah.
I don't know, have you ever found yourself stranded in a giant floating toilet across
no,
the ocean?
No, I'll tell you what, I did miss a ship, though. I'd never missed one in, like, 6 years, and we were flying, like, I don't know, Barbados or somewhere. We were going across the island, and there was, you know, dodging goats and chickens trying to make the ship because I was delayed out of Miami. And they're, like, in contact with the captain over the radio, like, we got him. We're going to be there in 20 minutes. I mean, I've been traveling all day to get there on a red eye and everything. And we go up over the hill, and the captain goes, sorry, we got to leave the comedian. And I'm like, 5 minutes away, and I'm watching
the ship
chug away. And I'm thinking, I could probably swim out there.
If they'd open the hatch,
I could probably make this happen. Because then it's just a mess. Then I had to stay the night and then catch another flight. And there was a cricket match. So I catch the next flight on this little like crop duster airport with like a VW with wings the next morning, and it's all the cricket players are there, and I got to island hop it, And seriously, it's like chickens and goats and all the cricket players, and then they got to move all the luggage to make sure we're, you know, this little 12-seater is going to get off the ground
the
and stuff.
Distributed evenly.
Yeah.
You know?
So, you know, I talked to, it, you know, filet mignon and lobster and only working two nights a week. But then there's also there's some travel nightmares that, you know. That's the stuff you don't see, you know.
Yeah.
That's somebody should make a documentary. Somebody, instead of, like, focusing on all the comedy and the acts and the good times and just all the stuff in between about sitting on the chicken coops in the airplane and distributing the load just to get there on time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the stuff people should see. I would watch that, but then again, you know, I watch all sorts of shit, so.
You could just log on to Facebook and look at every single complaint by every comedian.
Yeah, that's true. Do you Facebook?
They tell you.
There's
tell
not
you about
enough time. You don't have enough time.
They tell
to do
you
that.
About it all
you
day.
You need a team of experts.
Hey, you know what? I am not even on Facebook, and I'm proud. I'm loud and proud that I do not have a Facebook page. I will never have a Facebook page. I ain't got time for that.
Yeah,
no
social media.
You're not missing anything.
Everything I hear every time there's some sort of drama, some sort of flare up, some sort of ridiculous thing that's not even worth getting excited about, it usually started on Facebook somewhere.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I'm so glad I wasn't in the middle of whatever ridiculous thing you guys are bickering about now. That to me, that's my Facebook experience. I don't know. Not being do you Facebook a lot? Are you a big Facebooker?
You know, I'm trying to wean my way off of it. I just read something about how our brains haven't evolved to take on this much information that we're getting constantly with that bright light and stuff, and it stimulates our brains in a way that's not good. So that, you know, even now with like TVs, or you look at like Times Square in New York, just all these big, huge, you know, screens that just were like moths now, and we're drawn to them.
It's like
and it's not good for you. I mean, it's really like physically not good for you, especially like before you sleep, it keeps your brain awake, and then you know, you get all these series running through your heads, and you know, and then you have to wake up, right? And when you wake up, what do you grab? Your phone or your laptop and jump online, and it's just we're being trained in a way. Somebody's behind it, I think. Gotta be.
The porn Illuminati is involved.
There's so much porn on the internet. That's how they draw me in. That's how they keep their talons in me. I can't.
That's where they get you? Not the Facebook?
No, not the Facebook.
RedTube? Pornhub? There you go.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's free.
And that's we've evolved. That's evolution right there, is to reproduce. And thank God I'm not reproducing because I've got the internet now. So that's how they hook me in. I'm going to Facebook. But
I was telling my young nephews, we used to have to, like, you know, go, like, steal a VHS tape, you know, for porn, and then you'd have to have the VHS player. Now it's just free on the internet.
Yeah, I'm not ancient, but it's
we used to always just, you know, find your buddy who has a stepdad. Well, guaranteed that guy
has
good, an old garage box,
good
full
library,
of,
yeah,
full of Caballero video porn. Remember Caballero video, Swedish erotica. Just me.
That's that high school education kicking in again. I don't know, man. It's absurd. Like, I can remember if you wanted to drive somewhere you'd never been to before, you had to call the person and get directions and write them down. And then if you got lost, you'd have to find a payphone somewhere. Like, it's insane.
Guy, baby.
How am I still alive? I don't even understand it. Like, now I don't do anything but just get online and click a button, and then whatever I'm supposed to do after that is taken care of me by my computer, or my cell phone, or my GPS, or I don't know.
I have a buddy that he's been to my house probably 50 to 100 times. But if he doesn't GPS it, he has no fucking idea how to get to my place. That doesn't make sense to me.
Or how about not knowing your best friend's phone number? You just know it by just punching in their name on your phone. You know, whereas when you were growing up,
you
knew like 10 different friends' phone numbers by heart, right?
Yeah.
If I lost my cell phone, I would just have to move to a different state and start all over, because it's all there.
Your identity has been erased.
And the weird thing is, I still remember my home phone number from when I was like 10 years old, you know, because that's just something they pound into your head, you know. That's the only phone number I remember, is the most useless one that I'll never dial again for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
All the other important phone numbers, whatever, it's in my phone. So as long as I don't lose that, I'm in good shape.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a trip, man. I actually went back to a flip phone from a smartphone, and peace of mind followed soon after, you know? Just noticed that after a while, I'd have that blue notification light on my phone. It just made me anxious. You know, it's either a Gmail message or a Facebook message or a text or a missed call or a voicemail. Something that I have to do. I now have a responsibility to this blue light. And I just wasn't ready for that. You know, I just got tired of, you know, and then the data plan was killing me. Now I go back to this phone. If you don't call me or text me, it can wait. I'll get it when I get on the computer. And until then, I pay $40 a month and I have peace of mind.
Well, 6 months from now, you just won't have a phone at all. People will just have to actually hunt you down to communicate
with
you directly.
Yeah, or we'll communicate via carrier pigeon.
Carrier pigeon. Always a popular option.
Some smoke signals. There we got options. A telegraph. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Pony Express, all ships to sea, you know. So, Dave, you used to be someone told me you used to be a college quarterback.
High school.
High school?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
cool. How was that?
Oh, I was the star.
What's it like being the high school quarterback?
Yeah, isn't that the dude you want to be in
gig?
High school?
Well, yeah, but we went 2-9 my senior year. and so we blame it on coaching because we had two plays. One was go deep, and the other one was same play, get on out there. And no, it was good. I love
shotgun
it.
Formation, go deep.
Yeah, yeah.
You just launch it.
Just chuck it. Just because I couldn't see over the line. That's the thing. You know, I mean, I think
you were the Doug Flutie of
I was David Craig. Dave Craig. That's a Seattle reference right there for folks. A little sidearm. I was even number 17, and I threw sidearm like Craig.
Wow. Right-handed sidearm.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird.
And I couldn't see over the line. In high school, I was like 5'7", 5'8", and so I would drop back, and I would just know I had a good enough arm to where and would know where my receivers were, and I'd just chuck it there.
Wow.
Yeah, and I had a pretty good completion percentage. We just didn't we couldn't muster up any wins. We got two wins, but
how was the running game? You had no one to drop it off to and diversify the offensive attack?
We did. We had a guy who was pretty good. And then I think he stole somebody's baseball glove out of their locker, and so he didn't, or maybe he got all F's. I can't remember. somehow he might have got kicked off the team somehow.
Oh shit!
Yeah, I would remember one time he was in my class, and he was a really good running back too, and we were in algebra together, and he was cheating off my paper, and I said, "Hey man, don't cheat off my paper." You know, and I kind of moved away, and then we got the test results back, and I got a D+, and he got an F, and he goes, "Man, what happened?" And I go, "Dude, I told you not to cheat off me." "I don't know this stuff either." Wow. And he goes, "Oh, I thought you meant don't cheat off you like ethically and stuff."
Ethically,
I'm like, "No, man, I'm dumb too." And then he just goes, "You are. You're stupid."
Well, you were the quarterback. You're supposed to be.
I got the D+, right?
That's true, man.
Yeah.
That's true, man.
Staying alive.
Fucking destroyed him in that
Maintained
test.
Your academic eligibility.
That's it.
Yeah.
They said I had dyslexia in high school. It's a learning disability where you see numbers and letters backwards, right? And then I went to the doctor and I said, I don't think I have dyslexia as much as I think I have DDA. And he goes, "DDA?" And I'm like, "Hello, disorder deficit attention. Who's the doctor here, huh? I know you got a DHP from Havrad and everything, but..."
That one snuck up on me, man. You doesn't said DDA, take a... I wasn't quite sure where
right.
we were going, but that was...
Are you still dyslexic to this day?
No, I don't think... Maybe borderline. I don't know.
Really?
No, it doesn't affect me at all. I think I do. I think I have a little ADD, though. And I think that's probably from the internet, too, you know? Because there's just so much stuff going on. So they gave me some medication for my ADD, which is good, because now it helps me focus so much more on my heart palpitations and my liver failure and my difficulty breathing.
Yeah, it's like the Ritalin or something, which is just a pseudo big pharma version of cocaine.
Yeah. Well, you know, ADD, I guess when you're like completely neurotic, maybe ADD is a good thing. It prevents you from focusing too long on all the stupid bullshit that you might obsess over anyway. So maybe it's good that you just move on before you can really just completely fall apart.
Do you think more people are getting ADD and all these other things now, or do you think people have always gotten them and we're just now the awareness is growing of how What, just the spectrum of human consciousness and how fucked up it can be.
I think the awareness is growing of how easy it is to get prescription drugs like Adderall and how fun Adderall is. And the awareness is growing of how much money Big Pharma and these psychologists and doctors and whatever can make by prescribing these drugs. And I'm not really sure about ADD and all this stuff as much as it's a medicated society now, you know. It's like,
it sounds like you're against that. So are you kind of a naturalist? Like, you would you just do...
Well, you know, I've been known
homeopathic
to,
stuff.
To big homeopathic guy. No, it's just, you know, I've been known to smoke a little marijuana from time to time.
A little cough medicine. Little,
you know, but I've known some people refer to Seattle as Seattle-all, right? Have you ever heard that? And there's
no,
a lot of people, and I've known some people who go in deep on the Adderall, and it's just, you want to talk about
sense.
Somebody
I mean,
who
I
has,
would say 80% of Seattle has Asperger's anyways, so.
Well,
I
yeah,
mean,
but you
want to
talk
so
about somebody who has a short attention span. Look at somebody who's all hyped up on Adderall. There's somebody who's got a serious case of ADD, you know, like before the Adderall, maybe they're just normal, but after the Adderall, these people are maniacs.
I took
meth in a bottle, you
it
know?
Wasn't good. Yeah. I didn't like it. I mean, yeah, I got a lot of laundry done and folded. And books organized.
Your apartment
stuff.
Was spotless.
Yeah, but
time.
By the end of the day, I'm like, I kind of like procrastinating and just doing whatever I want all day instead of being so organized.
Yeah,
it tweaked me out too. I didn't dig it.
It's a weird drug, and it's addictive. Like I know people who are like really like, and it's prescribed by their doctor, so it's all cool. It's all whatever. They think it's safe
Adderall.
And whatnot. But yeah, but they're like addicted, like heavily to it. Like, and the only reason they get it is, oh, I have a hard time focusing.
Yeah. Well, like college kids like snort it now and stuff.
Well, college kids are maniacs. They're
yeah, right.
Stick it up their butt and who knows what else.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you got to get a paper done, I guess that's, you know.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. I was going to school and this kid, he was really into Adderall and he gave me some and it didn't really help. I didn't feel like I was this new, you know, some flowers for Algernon genius all of a sudden that could focus and blaze through academic shit. I just felt really fucking nervous. Like I drank a bunch of coffee.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was like,
that's pretty much what
this
it is.
Isn't helping. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to read this book and my knee is just tapping for an hour.
You know what? I recently read an article that, well, obviously it's different for everybody, right? Like some people don't need coffee in the morning. I don't even know how that is possible.
I drink coffee all day long.
I can't even talk to anybody for a couple hours until I have, you know, my two or three cups, right?
Yeah.
But so I was reading, like I noticed when I started drinking dirty martinis, right? And I would have one, I was just like, man, I just felt on point. I felt very creative. I felt like I could just, you know, have a great conversation. I was right there. And then I would have two and things were kind of, there was a little window where it was shutting, and then I'd have three, and it was kind of night time, no more creativity, just numb out.
Yeah.
So then I read an article last year that says, you know, there was this age range or something, and specifically men only, that one vodka martini, they did a study, like generated some type of creativity in their brain and like triggered a bunch of stuff, and I'm like, it works. That's true.
And this study was funded by the Dave Burley Foundation.
Yes, right? Yes, that's right. Dr. Burley has come up with this. No, and then I Googled it because I was trying to find it again just recently. And it is true, but there is a window where, you know, and that's the case for me. And like I said, everybody's different. But now if I want to write some new comedy or jokes, I got to start, you know, slamming a couple martinis.
Well, the problem
you have to.
Me,
yeah.
There's no other way.
No.
See,
that's a dangerous.
I would imagine, but you know, I bet there's probably, you know, some you know, you couldn't say that with cocaine, for example. Like they did a study and found if you just do one line of cocaine, you experience peak creativity.
If you smoke just a little bit of crack,
right?
It's brilliant. You'll be writing comedy all night long. That's a slippery slope, though. It seems like in the professional comedy world, there's either hardcore alcoholics or recovering alcoholics.
Yes.
There's like no in between. And a lot of that comes from like, okay, my first night, I needed to get my nerves up, so I had a couple drinks and it went well. So I thought maybe if I have a couple drinks, it'll go well next. And then the next thing you know, they're always having a couple drinks before they get up on stage. Is that kind of something that...
Yeah. At the beginning of this year, I stopped because I was... It's the same thing. I'd go up with a bourbon or you know, a beer or two. And then I stopped on New Year's, and I went 16 days without a drink at all. Just just 16. I know that's for
was
some
that easy
for some, no, you know, yeah. I mean, it wasn't. I wasn't like I was missing anything. I was just, you know, just trying to get back into shape and stuff. But so I started doing stand up, and I probably had not had a drink in 7 years, right? Oh. Before or during performing. It was just kind of like my little buddy up there, you know, like the Ron White or whatever, you know. And so I didn't, and so the first night back, I was at the casino down in Pechanga, and my roommate was with me, and I was like, I was kind of jonesing for that Maker's Mark Rocks right before I went up, you know, and I'm like looking at this packed room, and I'm just like, man, I got this. I think I got this, and I'm like, man, that would taste good right now, you know.
Yeah.
And I go up there, and I do the show, get off stage. My buddy's at the bar slamming a bunch of beers, and he goes, dude, how many times have I seen you perform? And I go, I don't know, 50? And he goes, at least 100. And I go, yeah. And he goes, best show ever.
Wow.
And I'm like, what? And he's like, you were present, you knew where you were going, took out a couple of hecklers, you know, you switched directions, you got them back, you know, he's just like, best set ever. I'm like, maybe there is something there, right? Huh, and then, so I did the next set. And then
totally wasted.
No, I was sober again. And then it was kind of like, all right, cool, I got this. And then for the next 2 weeks, I did it. And then it was kind of that thing, well, at least I know I could stop.
You did it both ways.
Right, yeah.
So. Yeah, I kind of had like the opposite. The first few times I went up, I was stone cold sober because I just couldn't imagine like not being sober up there and trying to like deal with it. And I did okay. And now I don't think I've ever been on stage, like maybe once or twice after having one or two beers I've been on stage performing, but I'm like always like sober every time I perform, which is funny because people look at me and it's the last thing they expect.
Yeah.
But again, it's almost kind of a superstition with me too, like, oh well, I don't want to go up there sloppy drunk because it'll be a train wreck, so now I have to be sober like every single time. But I've met a lot of people where they can't go up until they've had a few drinks.
Yeah.
And it's almost the only reason they even drink is because they're going up so often, you know, so they're always drinking.
Yeah, I was talking with a comedian on Friday about that, and he said, you know, we're just talking about smoking, and, you know, some guys that are comedians who smoke are like, you know, sometimes I just smoke. I'm just waiting for my spot, you know, which is a bad habit, I guess. But he was like, yeah, smoking, drinking. I mean, I have a couple beers, you know, when I perform, and I perform almost every night. So that means I've been drinking every day for 5 years.
Right. Yeah. No, I know.
And then you're like, shit, that sounds kind of bad.
Yeah, right. I quit smoking the same month I started stand-up, and it was so hard because there were so many more excuses to smoke a cigarette now. And there's that adrenaline dump when you get off stage and all this. It would be the perfect time for a cigarette, you know. It's so strange how performing plays into your addictions like that, you know. It's a really big part of it.
For sure. Let me ask you, James, as a club manager, do you, I mean, because some clubs kind of frown on it a little bit. They'd rather have you just up there with some water or something or make sure that you're not taking it too far. Mm-hmm. But I've always thought it kind of
gives a good vibe.
Well, it gives, a social little, hey, let's have fun. Let's have a chat. I'm with you, guys. Yeah. You know, we're going to socially do this. And then I also thought, from a marketing standpoint, you know, hey, it looks like he's having fun. I'm going to order a couple more of those. That's more revenue for the club, right? Right. Does it get looked at like that? Or
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I would definitely see it that way. And
well, I think that's why traditionally a lot of comics hate performing at places that don't sell alcohol. You know, I mean, it's part of that. Hey, let's have fun. Let's get together. Let's, you know.
Yeah, but then you get in the area of those guys who, like you said, are recovered alcoholics or whatever. And then that must be weird for them to be performing at places where everyone else is drinking and you're not.
Isn't it technically illegal to take a drink on stage in Washington?
No, it was for a while, but then they changed the law back to the way it used to be. But the Liquor Control Board, I don't know what it's like in California, or I mean, I imagine Vegas is probably pretty regulated, or at least they have rules set up for it. But in here, in Washington, the Liquor Control Board is pretty hard.
When I first started, I remember it was always a big deal because people would take their beer up on the stand and everybody'd be like, whoa, you can't have your beer up there.
Yeah, I mean, I remember moving here and doing some bartending and stuff, and they're always just hammering home all this Liquor Control Board fear-mongering that you have to worry about if you're an establishment that sells booze.
Yeah, I recently worked with a few veterans who are, all on the wagon and have been for, 15, 17 years and stuff. And they always, like, in the green room, they always just kind of give you this look like, maybe someday you'll get it right. You know what I mean? And it's
really?
Not like,
you have one of,
not like they're better than you, but it's just like they seem more happy in their life with what they're doing. I'm sure they're fighting it all the time. But at the same time, it's like, these guys have been around forever, you know? And it's just like, I was recently at Brad Garrett's MGM, and he's sober for years now. And he's got, in the green room, is just this sweet bar, like the coolest green room ever.
Yeah,
and it's just,
I've seen that green room.
Have you? At MGM? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're sitting in there, and another comic, is recovering alcoholic, and so Brad gets wind of that, and he's just back there. He's like, "Oh, do you want me to take this out of here? Should I get all this out of here?" And the guy's like, "No, I'm good with it. It's fine." Yeah. And I'm sitting there over there going, "Could you leave the bourbon?"
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah, we talked to Paul Hooper not too long ago. He's sober now, and he's got some dark stories about those drinking times.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's one of the ironies too. I guess I can't really trivialize or belittle anybody's struggles with alcohol, but when you're a comedian, your struggles with alcohol are public because you're on stage in front of like who knows how many people, and it almost kind of like drives it home even more when you wake up the next day and you're like, not only was I like, belligerent, who knows what, but I in front of like 500 total strangers.
Yeah.
It's a whole different story than just like in front of, grandma and your uncles and cousins on Thanksgiving dinner or whatever.
Well, I know one dude who he's a recovered drug and alcohol. He's a comedian and he's sober now. But he's kind of mean to people. And we did a show here where, I was hosting a show and a couple guys went up. Show's going great. I bring this guy on the stage. We go outside to smoke a little cough medicine, as you say. And we come back in. The vibe in the room has noticeably changed. This comedian had attacked one group of people, then attacked another group of people, and then had merged his attack and was basically waging a war on all fronts against the audience. And I was telling the story to another comedian, and they were like, yeah, how is that better than being an alcoholic?
The angry recovering
if the effect you have on other people is just as detrimental as it would be if you were a rampaging, blackout drunk fucking maniac.
Yeah, the angry recovering alcoholic is the worst. That's I'm more for the...
Because then they
I'm
still think they're better than
now.
You, but they're a fucking asshole about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's a fine line, Sometimes that can be funny, too, when you're that angry guy
as a comedic character, not in real life.
Right, yeah, because then you get them in real life, and they're just like, yeah, I quit 12 years sober. I don't need it anymore. I did it for me. I quit for me. So it's like, well, all right, good for you. Let us continue to pickle our livers in peace, please.
Have I made it clear? I'm totally sober, you assholes.
Yeah. It's like people bragging about running a marathon. I'm running a marathon. I'm doing it for me. I'm doing it. I'm going to run all those miles for me. It's like, well, go do it. Get out of here, you know? You don't need to tell me why you're doing it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is a Tight 60 podcast. We're hitting about that 60-minute marker now. I know, Dave, you're performing tonight, right?
Yeah.
So make sure.
Got to go get a couple martinis.
Get in your headspace. Get that bourbon flowing.
Right.
Before we go, you got anything you want to pimp? I know you're on Facebook, as we mentioned earlier. I don't know if you want to throw out the URL. You're on Twitter.
Yeah. Facebook and Twitter. Twitter at the Dave Burley, BURLEIGH.
Were there a lot of other Dave Burleys on Twitter? When
there
you
were.
Wow.
There were. I think I may have even in a bourbon stupor.
registered
as Dave Burley at some point and then forgot about it. So I need to buy it back from myself.
Nice.
That's it. Just got a new CD coming out that was recorded here at Comedy Underground.
Nice. When was that recorded?
That'll drop next week. I brought some bootleg copies with me this week, and it's been doing well. And there's a few local jokes on there. One's called Renton, Washington. that is the title track, Renton,
nice,
Washington.
Nice.
And it's called These Are Thinking Jokes, and it's been a long time since I've had a CD out, so I'm happy that's done.
So is that going to be available on Amazon and
iTunes?
Yeah,
Amazon and iTunes. And
that's your live performances?
Yeah. So
cool. And then you got Burley a second coming out.
Yeah, Burley a minute.
Burley
yeah,
a minute.
I don't know if I could do a second.
I would be impressed if you could pull off a second and really.
How many impressions can you do in 1 second? Can go. That would be amazing.
That would be amazing.
I would watch that.
Yeah, so on my YouTube channel, just Dave Burley, and look for that and subscribe. And
you've got your own site, too. Is it DaveBurley.com?
DaveBurley.com, yep. Burley.com. And getting ready to update that again, too. So
I'm going to secure rights to TheDaveBurley.com, and then we'll wage a fierce legal battle.
That's fine. Go for it.
All right, we'll keep your eyes peeled for These Are Thinking Jokes, right? You said that was the title of the album. Once again, Dave Burley, thanks for joining us on the Tight 60 podcast, and we're going to call it a night.
Cool. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.